I wish there were a way for me to communicate with my words how much it means for us to be back here, to be here with you. I can only give a hearty amen to the letter that Alicia's parents wrote and asked to be read here about how much it means to us that you have cared for our family in our absence and taken them in, and you did exactly what I asked you to do. You checked up on my parents and Lisa's parents, and you took good care of them, and that is a debt that can't really ever be repaid. It's something that's more precious than gold, and they say that absence makes the heart grow fonder, and that's certainly been an effect of this trip on us. Being away from you has caused us to be more in love with you every day and to appreciate what we have. And this passage and this sermon for today is obviously inspired by the trip that we've just made. Because as we traveled around from place to place, whether it be flying into Paris and then on to Ukraine, or coming back through Frankfurt and Houston, this passage just kept coming up in my mind, this idea of God confusing the languages. There were parts of me on this trip that wished he just hadn't have done that. Because it makes things a lot more difficult, doesn't it, for us? At least that's the way we think. We think if God hadn't done what He did here in Genesis chapter 11, flying to Ukraine is really not all that much more intimidating than flying to Los Angeles or New York or any other major city. But it makes it really hard, doesn't it, when you go to different places and you just simply can't understand what people are saying. We were sitting outside. There's a very much a sense on this trip in which we had to hurry up so we could wait. And you've probably been in situations like that in your life where you rush, 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 and then once you do one piece, you just have to sit and be patient. And so there were a lot of opportunities to work on our patience on this trip, and I can remember one such case. We had a document, a pile about this big, and our facilitator went inside and she said, "You sit there and be patient." And I said, "Okay." So we sat down, and the patience was a little more difficult than we thought, but a lady came up to us, and she started speaking to us, and we didn't understand a lick of what she was saying. Not one single word did we understand. And they talk so fast, there's no chance to really say, I don't understand what you're saying. And so she got all of this off of her chest, and I said, "English." And her eyes rolled back. Now, I don't think she was asking me to solve some complex math problem for her. I don't think she was asking me what my opinion was on Syrian refugees. She was probably trying to ask us whether the room that she was looking for was on this floor or not. At least that's the best I could tell just from her body language. But at the end of all that, all I could do was say, "English." That's all I got. I mean, I know four words in Ukrainian. "Privyet," which means hello. Thanks to Bill, I know "spasibo," which means thank you. "Dasvidanya" is goodbye, and "dobriday" is good day. So every single one of my conversations in Ukraine went like this: hello, good day, thank you, goodbye. That's all I got. And if we hadn't had a translator, things would have been impossible. It would have been absolutely impossible for us to accomplish in 12 days what we accomplished without someone who knows the language and who can communicate with other people who speak that same language. And so here we have a situation where at first you might think this would be the dream scenario. The whole earth speaking English, right? Or just some common language. Something that everyone can understand. And yet God does something that kind of makes us scratch our head for a moment and say, why did He do that? Why did He seemingly make things much more difficult for us and confuse the languages where we couldn't understand? And you can imagine the frustration that must have existed in those first few hours. Can you imagine how many hairs were pulled out in the first few hours of walking up to people and speaking, and they say, Hebrew. Sorry, I got nothing for you. And then you got to walk over here and you got to say, do you understand what I'm saying? Nope. And then finally, to see groups start to come together, and it was really interesting to the point where it almost took you several words into someone who understood English and they're speaking English to you for you to recognize, hey, they're speaking my language. They're speaking English. I understand what they're saying. So you can imagine the frustration, but then also kind of the relief that there were other people there on this scene who understood what each other were saying. But let's go back and let's read this text again and just see what the problems were and why maybe God did what He did in this case. Genesis chapter 11, verse 1. Now the whole earth used the same language and the same words. It came about as they journeyed east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. They said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they used brick for stone and they used tar for mortar. They said, come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top will reach into heaven. And let us make for ourselves a name. Otherwise, we will be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. The Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. The Lord said, behold, they are one people, and they all have the same language. And this is what they began to do. And now nothing which they purpose to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down there and there confuse their language, so that they will not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. Therefore its name was called Babel, because the Lord confused the language of the whole earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth. Do you see the problem that the people identify in this scenario? What are they afraid of? Well, they're not afraid of going to a place where they can't be understood. Everybody uses the same language and the same words. Everything should be easy as far as communication is concerned. What are they afraid of? They're afraid, verse 4, of being scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. They didn't want to do that. They didn't want to be scattered abroad all over the face of the earth. And so they determine, let's build a major city for ourselves. And let's make a name for ourselves. And let's not be scattered abroad, which would be the most unlikable alternative to building this city and building this tower. But do you see how God looks at the situation? What He doesn't want is for them to huddle and to build this city and all stay right there. Why doesn't God want that? Why doesn't He want us to huddle. And in this story, I think we can see a very sharp contrast between the nature of God and then human nature. As humans, we have a tendency to want to huddle. We find people that speak the same language as us, and so we all huddle together in the same country. And we find people who like the same climate as us, and so we further locate ourselves into a certain region so that we can speak the same language, but we can all enjoy the same temperatures and the same climates. On Saturdays, we decide that we want to collect ourselves with people who have common rooting interests as we do. And so we're going to have people come over to our house and we're all going to root for the same team, or we're all going to go to the same game. And we do that in just seemingly innumerable ways. We have a tendency to want to find common interests and come together and huddle and just be together, just us. And the problem with that is it goes against what God intends for us to do as His people. Think back to the very beginning of creation. Go back to Genesis chapter 1. You remember from studying this chapter recently, whether it be in a sermon that we did, or in our drill class that we do on Sunday afternoons, you know the story of creation. You know that in 6 days, God spoke into existence everything and everyone that would exist on the face of the earth. And He gave those first creatures a mission. He gave them something that He wanted them to do. Look in chapter 1, verse 26. This is on day 6, and God is creating man and woman. It says in verse 26, "Then God said, 'Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth.'" God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him, male and female, He created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth." Do you see the mandate? Do you see what God intended for His people to do? He did not intend for them to centrally locate. He intended for them to be fruitful and multiply and expand and fill the whole earth. Well, what are they filling the whole earth with? People, yes, as they procreate, as they begin to have children, and those children have children, and those children have children, they'll begin to increase in number, and yes, they'll fill the earth with people, but what are those people bearing? They're bearing the image of God. It is as if God is shining down upon us as His creation, and we're kind of like a mirror. He shines down on us, and we reflect His image to those around us. And so what God wanted for man, what His intention for man to do, was to be fruitful, to multiply, to expand, to spread out over the whole face of the earth and fill the earth with His glorious image. But then we see the problems that came in the days of Noah. And we see that the people have been about glorifying themselves. They're not filling the whole earth. They were fruitful and they multiplied, but they didn't fill the earth with the right stuff. They didn't fill the earth with the image of God. Every thought and intent of man's heart was only evil continually. And so God sent a flood. And then look in Genesis chapter 9, and you'll see that God's intention for man has not changed. Even though God was sorry that he had made man, even though he had wiped everyone except for Noah and his family off of the face of the earth, his intent for man hasn't changed. In Genesis chapter 9 and verse 1, he says, "And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, 'Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth.'" God still wants the same thing. But what God wanted for man is what man was most scared of in Genesis chapter 11. They're afraid of being scattered abroad over the face of the earth because, really, human tendency is to want to huddle together and to be comfortable. We want to be around people that we love and that love us, and we want to be around people that like the same things that we like, and we want to be around people who speak the same language that we speak, eat the same kinds of food, and enjoy the same kinds of entertainment that we do. That's our human tendency. But God has called us. He called them, and he's called us to a higher purpose. To step outside what makes us comfortable and to do what we know our Creator has created us to do. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth with his image. We are every bit as much as Adam and Eve were created in the image of God and given the exact same mandate to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And we do that in a number of ways, don't we? We could do that by having children, getting married and having children and increasing the population of this planet. But don't we also do that in teaching the gospel? Don't we fill the earth with His glory and His image? And when you think about what's taking place here in Genesis chapter 11, notice what the people are doing. Notice their intention for building this great city and building this great tower. It says in verse 3 that they said, "Let's make bricks. And let's use brick for stone and tar for mortar." And then verse 4, "Come, let us build ourselves a city." What are they after? They want something that's theirs. This is ours. This is for us. We're going to build something for us to be able to enjoy. And notice what else entices them to do this. And let's make a tower whose name will reach, or whose top will reach into heaven. And let us make for ourselves a name. They wanted a city. And they wanted a name. But what God wanted, what He ultimately intended for Adam and Eve to do, for Noah and his family to do, for these people, direct descendants of Noah to do, was to spread out over the face of the whole earth and fill it with His glory, fill it with His image. But they didn't want to do that. They wanted to centrally locate. And they wanted to be comfortable. And they wanted a name for themselves. And they wanted a city for themselves. They weren't about filling the whole earth with the glory and the image of God. And it would be easy for us to look into this passage and for us to say, how could they disobey God like that? How could they do that? How could they have this mindset? Have you ever thought about it this way? I met Leisha at a funeral home in July of 2004. I was instantly attracted to her. She, not so much toward me. But I wore her down. I was persistent. And I wore her down over a period of time. And eventually, I said to Leisha, "Come, let's marry. And let's make a name for ourselves. And let's start a family together. You and me. You and I, we'll start a family together. I like you, you finally like me, and we have some of the same interests spiritually. We're on the same page. Let's Let's start a family together. And let's make a name for ourselves. And we did that. We got married in June of 2007. And after that, I said, come, let's buy a house together. And let's make it our home. And let's start our family there. And we want to make our house as good as it can possibly be. And the first house we bought wasn't all that great, and we lost a ton of money on it when we had to sell it, and that's just kind of a rite of passage of being married, right? Get it handed to you a couple of times at least. And the second house we bought was a little bit nicer than that, and the next house we bought was a little bit nicer than that. And now we come here and we say, come, let's build a house and let's have granite countertops. And let's have stained concrete floors and let's make this place as nice as it can be, and it will be ours and it will be for us, and we can make our name great and we can live in comfort in this place. Now, I'm not suggesting to you that it's wrong to marry, that it's wrong to start a family, that it's wrong to build a house or to buy a house. But what I'm saying is, can't you see the connection that we have in human nature to these people in Genesis chapter 11? We do the same thing today that they did then in a large number of ways. Let me give you another one. Three or four families together, they like each other. They enjoy spending time with one another. They see each other on as being on the same page, spiritually speaking. And so they say, come, let us start a church together. Let's start meeting on Sundays and Wednesdays, and let's form a church. And let's build a building. Let's build a tower. And let's make that our meeting place. And we'll invite other people who think similarly to we, and we'll invite them to come and join our family. And this will be a great place for us to be together and to spend time together enjoying one another's company and just celebrating the common interests that we have. And let's make it as good as we can make it. And let's invite as many people, as long as they're like-minded individuals. Let's start huddling here at this place, and let's make this be who we are as God's people. You see a problem with that? Do you see that as being in conflict with the mandate of God? Be fruitful. Multiply. Fill the earth. Now, just like I stated in getting married and having children and building a house and wanting it to be a comfortable place to live, just like that wasn't wrong in and of itself, as long as we have the proper mindset, having a church, being part of a church family that huddles together regularly and spends time together and worships our God together and sings praises together and prays for one another and helps one another and shares food when people are sick or when they're out of town. Those are good things. But if we forget the mandate, if we forget God's intention, and all we ever are as a family is a family who huddles together in our own house and we can't even tell you the names of any of our neighbors, that's a problem. That's a problem. That's not God's intention for our family. God's intention for our family is to, yes, be a family, yes, show an example to everyone around you of what it means to be a believer in God, reflect the image of God. And what God wants you to do is He wants you to know who your neighbors are. He wants you to know them. He wants you to speak to them. He wants you to bear His image before them. For this church, He doesn't just want a church that huddles together three times a week. He wants a family that is serious about being fruitful and multiplying and spreading out and filling Conway with His image. That's His expectation for us as a church family. And so when we see people who come and visit with us, it's great to have personal affinity toward one another. It's great to have loving relationships. It's great to be hugging on the people that we hold so dear. And I owe a bunch of you hugs that I didn't get to before the service began. But He wants us to be fruitful and multiply and fill. And if we see somebody that's come to visit with us in our assembly, God wants us to know their name. He wants us to speak to them and to be a reflection of His glorious image. God wants us, if this is the place we've chosen and this is where we're going to meet, we ought to know who lives over there. We know who lives over there, right? Everybody knows that person. He's right there. Right? We know them. They're over there. But who lives there? And who's this lady with the yoga studio? I don't even know her name. And what about these people over here on the other side of the railroad tracks? What do we know about them? Sadly, I don't really know a whole lot about them other than when I see them walking in the streets as I'm passing by to come to this place where I've chosen to come together with my family with common interests and share time of togetherness and fellowship and love and worship. And those things are all wonderful things. Those things are great things, things that we ought to be doing and we are doing. And it's just a beautiful thing to do and to be a part of. But the mandate of God hasn't changed since the very beginning of time. Be fruitful. Multiply. Fill the earth with the image of God. If you are a Christian and you've never shared the story of Jesus with another single person, you've never stepped out in faith, stepped out of your comfort zone, and tried to share the gospel with anyone, then you're not in harmony with the mandate of God. You're not in congruence with His intent for you in your life. If you've never walked across the street to meet your neighbors and to invite them to church or to ask them questions about their lives and to try to break down those barriers that exist in our human nature, to want to huddle and to not step outside of that which makes us comfortable, then we're not doing the mandate that God has given to us as human beings, as creations of His, as image bearers of His glory. He doesn't just want a people that huddle in their homes and that huddle in their church buildings and never reach out, never step out in faith into the areas of discomfort so that His name can be glorified. As I thought about these things over the last couple of weeks, I began to really appreciate the fact that I was in a country that I didn't understand hardly anyone and no one understood me. Because I recognized that it is that way with a purpose. God did it on purpose. He did it with intent. There are people who speak a language that I don't understand, who live 6,000 miles from here in a country called Ukraine, and the reason why they live there and the reason why they speak that language and not mine is because God intended for people to spread out and fill the whole earth with His image. And there are people over there doing that. Just like there are people here who are trying to do that. Trying to live according to the mandate of God. To be fruitful and multiply and spread out. Step out of your comfort zone. There's a really neat story in the life of Jesus where Jesus comes to Bethsaida and he enters the city and the apostles bring him a man who's blind. And what's interesting to me is how Jesus handles this blind man. The very first thing he does to him is he takes him by the hand and leads him outside of the city. Now imagine being blind for a moment. If I were blind, I imagine that I would want to hear the same sounds every day. And I would want to have smells that were normal to me. And I would want to feel ground under my feet that I recognized. I knew where I was. And yet Jesus completely removes this blind man from everything he knows using his other senses. And he takes him to a place that he probably doesn't know, at least not as well as he would know his place inside the city. And he heals him there. He heals him outside the city. And then Jesus gives him a very peculiar instruction. Don't go back into the town. And don't tell anybody in the town what I've done. Don't go back. Don't go back to that mentality of needing to feel comfortable in every situation and every circumstance of life. Don't let the comforts that we enjoy and the familiar people and sounds and smells and locations that we know and know well. Don't let those things keep you from doing what God intends for you to do. So when you go to school, I'm going to speak over here. When you go to school, go there with the intent of being fruitful and multiplying and filling that school with the image of God. And when you guys go to work with this intent to be fruitful and multiply and fill your workplace with the image of God. When you go home from work, go home with the intent of being fruitful and multiplying and filling your neighborhood with the glorious image of God. When we come here, let's be mirrors. Let's let God shine down upon us and let's reflect His image and His glory to those people and those people and those people and these people over here on the other side of the tracks. And when we go out to eat today, I shouldn't have mentioned that, should I? I'm going to lose my audience. I'm always doing that. Shouldn't have mentioned food. Well, we're wrapping up. When you go out to eat here in just a few moments, go there with the intent of being fruitful and multiplying and filling that restaurant with the image of God. Step outside of this bubble of comfort that we sometimes like to stay in. It's human nature to want to huddle and build ourselves a house and a tower and a city where we don't have to spread out. That's our fear. People are more afraid of public speaking than they are of dying. You've heard that statistic before. Step outside your comfort zone today and do the very thing that God intended for you to do from the very beginning of creation. If you're here this morning and you're not part of the family of God, you have a tremendous opportunity put before you to accept His amazing gift of salvation. To be saved by the blood of His precious Son, whom was slain before He ever said, "Let there be light." God's intention for us was to be with Him and to fill this earth, this life, and the life to come with His glorious image. If you've never done that, then who will follow Jesus today? Who's going to follow Him today? If you're ready to make that commitment to Him, then please step forward and say, "I will follow Jesus," as we stand and sing this song to encourage you.